Joseph Farris is an internationally known cartoonist. If you've read The New Yorker, you've seen his work. A barrel-chested, beribboned military man holds forth at a cocktail party. I'm absolutely against total war, but then I'm not for total peace either. Or a sandaled plebiscite whispers to Nero, "Surely, as the world's only superpower, we're entitled to a little mischief now and then." Well, I'll never read a Joseph Farris cartoon the same way again, because I can't help but see them now through the prism of his new book about a time when he was an army grunt fighting in Europe during World War II. He sketched then as well. I'm looking at a picture of his machine gun unit Jeep, nicknamed Connecticut Yankee. Here are his pals in the foxhole, Frank Barola, getting drunk on a bottle of wine he'd found. He would be killed the next day. Joseph Farris sent his sketches, along with hundreds of letters and photos he took, home to his family in Danbury, Connecticut, where his parents, Lebedee's Americans, ran a corner store. He forgot about the letters and pictures, but now he's collected them in a wonderful scrapbook. It's called A Soldier's Sketchbook from the Front Lines of World War II. You can see some of them at herenow.org. As Joseph Farris joins us from WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut. Joseph, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to get right to it. You know what I love here, Joe? Your language. You see a Wallace Beery movie and you tell your parents it's a darn good picture. And you say things are going swell, you know, even when they're not. And everyone is tops. You know, you hear a sort of pre-Vietnam optimism. Did you hear that as well when you read them?
Oh, yes. I was quite surprised, especially with the word swell. And I'm on a campaign now to bring that word back again. I didn't want my parents to worry. And I usually would start out, "Everything here is swell, folks." And then I would describe perhaps events that took place that had nothing to do with the fighting, because censorship was so strict in those days. But one thing about the letters, they were really quite bland for the most part. These letters had sat quiescent for about 50 years. I just couldn't get myself to read them. And when I turned 80 in 2004, I thought my daughter and her family, if they're going to know anything of what happened to me, I better start doing about it. And so I revisited the letters for the first time, and it was really quite an extraordinary experience. It took me right back to the war. I found myself dreaming about it, and I was quite immersed in it.
Huh.
And I put it in scrapbook form. I had absolutely no intention of having it published. I didn't think it was worthy of publication. And one day, about 3 years ago, a member of the family, no relative of mine, happened to be in the house. And I guess I was probably showing off, and I brought the scrapbook out. There were two scrapbooks, actually. And she looked at him and said, "Well, this should be published."
Well, we can see why. I mean, you know, because again, we get this, literally we get snapshots of the time. We get these figurative snapshots in your letters, not just the language so filled with youth and hope and optimism and swell stuff and people are the tops. And there's, you know, long letters as opposed to, you know, tweets and things. You really linger over them. And, you know, we hear how much you miss and love your family. But then in the writing you provide and also in some of your sketches, we see and hear how hard it was. Describe these scenes in the foxholes. In one, you are holding your helmet up with a rifle to make sure you don't get your head shot off. You were right on the front lines with the Germans. You could see them lining up for food.
That's true. That was the attack in Biche, France, the Maginot Line. Nobody had ever conquered this particular spot, by the way. And as we were approaching the fort, the shells suddenly came pouring in. So we ran a little bit further, and we got into this hole. And I dove into the hole, and before I knew it, there were five or six of us in the hole. And I said, "You know, one of us should look out, make sure nobody's creeping up on us. If they dropped in a hand grenade, that would have been the end of us."
Right.
But there were no volunteers, and since I was a sergeant, I put the helmet on the rifle, and I gingerly lifted it up above the hole. There was no return of fire. I immediately peeked out and then ducked again, and I did this a number of times. Fortunately for us, one of our artillery shells must have knocked them out, and we survived. And that was the reason for the hole. I'd like to, on page 103.
I'm there.
Okay, I did a drawing of Ted Lederer.
Yeah.
Now, we had lost our first lieutenant, a Lieutenant Gray, the first day of battle. The platoon was taken over by Ted Lederer, who was a tech sergeant. And he was a splendid leader and someone I knew well and I was quite fond of. And he died in April of 1945. But the reason I bring this up again, one day last week, I got a telephone call. The voice on the other end asked me, "Is this Joseph Farris?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "This is Ted Lederer." I absolutely froze.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned out it was his nephew. He had found out about me accidentally. The BBC had done a video report on me, which was broadcast, and these people from Western Canada had seen it, and he called me. This whole thing was a very emotional thing for me.
I bet it was. But how so?
It suddenly brought to memory Ted Lederer. I hadn't thought of him except when I was putting the book together, and then I promptly forgot about it, you know. And he and I had become quite friendly, even though he was a sergeant. I was only a private at the beginning of my training. He spoke to us man to man, not sergeant to private and so on. He was just a damn good fellow. He was a, if I may use the word, a swell guy.
Yeah. And what a gift you've given to his family.
Yes. One other thing I'd like to mention, though, my letters were rather bland for the most part. And one day after the war, I was doing duty in a company headquarters and I had nothing to do, and I started nosing around. And I came across what is called the company morning reports. What that is that the sergeant each day, in very short, terse language, would explain what happened the day before. In other words, 3 killed, 2 injured, and morale low. So it occurred to me to put these next to the letters which said everything was swell, sort of a counterpoint there. My letters would say everything is fine, nothing's going on, and you'd read this little excerpt right next to the letter, and you'd say, my God, 2 were killed that day, 3 were injured.
I've got one of those comparisons. It's on page 149. It's a letter home to your brother. This is actually where you're kind of alluding to this. You say to him, don't get any ideas joining up here. I've never been more serious in all my life. I'm taking care of our share of the fight right now. If necessary, your turn will come later. Meanwhile, you cooperate all you can at home and help out the war effort. And right next to that is clipped one of the morning reports, and it says, January 13th, 1945, direct hit on company command post causing 4 casualties.
Where my letters, of course, gave no indication of this, and I couldn't have gotten away with it anyway. Censorship would have blocked it immediately.
So here you have this, you know, incredible scrapbook. You get to see yourself as a young man. More than see yourself. I mean, you get to see yourself as an evolving artist. You get to hear what your thoughts were in these letters. What's that like to have that, you know, as you head on?
It was quite strange. This person in the letters was almost a different person to me. I hadn't revisited these letters in 50 years. I just couldn't get myself to look at them. And suddenly I found myself back in the war with this young person who was me, and yet almost unrecognizable. And I was kind of impressed with what he went through and survived. I was very fortunate in that I was able to handle the whole thing. And I think my training in the store helped considerably. My parents were really illiterate and learned to speak English by going to the movies 3 times a week. And when they were in the movies, I and my brother ran the store. So I learned how to run a business, in a sense. So when I did become a leader, I was able to handle it. I had some experience. And I suspect my experience in the store contributed to this.
Joseph Farris, his new book, it's really a scrapbook, is filled with drawings, photographs, and letters home to his family in Danbury, Connecticut, when he served on the front in World War II. It's called A Soldier's Sketchbook from the Front Lines of World War II. See much more at hereandnow.org. Joseph Farris, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.